Hello, listeners. Today, we will have a very special guest who has worked tirelessly and extensively to help Black women in the Black diaspora, essentially. Dr. P. Soyinka Arawele, or so many of us call her Dr. P, is a professor of international and African politics at Ithaca College and the chairperson of the politics department. From Ithaca to Lagos, Dr. P has inspired so many organizations and serves on countless committees. Thank you for joining us today. And if you'd like to follow her work, be sure to check out her blog. Now let's get over to it. Well, first of all, thank you so much for squeezing me in. I know that life is very busy, especially now. So I recently learned that in addition to everything that you are, you focus in international and African politics, political studies, and democratic development, and politics of popular cinema. The popular cinema just really had my brain going, because I was going to ask, why do you think more accurate depictions of Africa in the media are essential? Like, I know one of your books is called Reframing Contemporary Africa, so this is an issue that you're very, very well informed about.
Mm-hmm. Great question. When I thought, wow, you have a way of actually selecting questions that go to the heart of, I think, the long-term, really historical struggle for liberation.
Thank you.
And for me, that has to do with what it means to be an African mm-hmm. at a time like this, and to be part of a ongoing quest for, for freedom, for social justice, for change, mm-hmm. for the affirmation of our voices and our identity, yeah. and redefining ourselves.
Absolutely.
And so when I think about representation, it really has to do with a process of reclaiming, the mm-hmm. entire long centuries of enslavement, and then of building slave plantations mm-hmm. within the continent. Was a process of appropriation of everything.
Yeah.
Appropriation of your resources, mm-hmm. Your labor, your identity, your homes,
Absolutely.
Your future, your culture, and then denigrating that in order to construct a hierarchy of existence.
Exactly.
Yes. And so when I think about representation, it's much more than PC.
Mm-hmm.
Just the words
Absolutely.
We speak, it's about starting to intervene in that process
Absolutely.
Where you are kind of neutralized and where you are
it was fully dehumanization. Rudyard
yeah.
Kipling's The White Man's Burden, he wasn't talking about humans, he was talking about beasts, about demons.
That's right.
Like, people believe that for a very long time.
They do.
So I think each day as Africans we need to work mm-hmm. to change that. I mean, it's not our jobs, but that being said, mm-hmm. who else is going to do it?
We've got to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
It starts with knowledge. And I think the biggest tragedy is when you begin to see governments that have not just bought into that, but become mm-hmm. complicit in,
yeah.
In the kind of discourses that, our people are corrupt, my people are ignorant,
mm-hmm.
in order to maintain their power. And so seizing representation is not just from the foreigners, it's also from often our own governments.
Absolutely.
And the power elite. The reason why I hesitate in always using the word dehumanization
mm-hmm.
is I often ask myself, who really was dehumanized? Maybe the intention was to reduce and neutralize our humanity, but is it the person who commits those acts of violence
mm-hmm.
that is dehumanized, that has removed their humanity?
Oh, wow.
Or is it the person you're doing it to? So,
Absolutely.
Again, that's kind of, I'm like, you cannot dehumanize me.
Oh, wow.
You torture me.
What an interesting way to look at that.
You can commit acts of violence
mm-hmm.
against me, but rarely have you seen the victims of abuse
yeah.
become less than human.
Yeah, it's like you're the one that's empty, that's cold.
I know, it's the beast.
Wow.
Who's
there,
and it's really dehumanized. So
oh
again,
my gosh, that's very.
But I still understand why people use the word dehumanization,
Absolutely.
Because you're treating them as less than human.
Absolutely.
And so basically, yes, that's kind of what,
wow,
you know, I look at tiredness. We're tired.
We're tired
of being helpless.
Absolutely.
Tired of being seen as victims. And I think retrieving our capacity to speak and
exactly
how we speak.
Exactly right.
Critical,
yeah.
Yes.
Very so. Nice. Wait, that's so amazing. Well, you mentioned foreigners and immigration, and well, I, you know, hence my accent, obviously, immigrated to the States. I moved here when I was 7. And I was talking about this in class the other day, that some people argue that immigration isn't the best for Nigeria sometimes because people's expertise and money should be funneled back in Nigeria. Some people, you know, stay in London, they stay in wherever. So I guess what are your thoughts, your personal thoughts on mass immigration and permanent relocation of many Africans, particularly Nigerians? It's a hot topic.
It's a hot topic.
I know you're about to go off.
And, you know, it's a hot topic that is surrounded by guilt, you know, or guilt trip or shaming and so on and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also like a very old topic, you know. In Nigeria, at a point in time, they used to talk about, you know, the Andrew, you know, who travels, who, you know, comes back home and, you know, fakes an accent. And
oh, that's so bad. If not, they'll call you Oyinbo. That's so bad.
Yes. You become this, like,
no,
you know, the little British Oyinbo, you know, and so on.
No! That's so funny.
And so I think the first thing we have to just remember is,
yes,
the reason why you use the word mass immigration, you know, mass immigration points us to the idea of a reason. It's either an expulsion or a mass reason to push-pull factor.
Absolutely.
Is there a reason why a mass is being pushed out and so on? If we leave the word mass out of mass immigration, then you have to accept that migration is nothing new. It's been part and parcel of human history. You know, people tend to think of Africa as this kind of closed out dark continent. Nothing could be farther than the truth of history.
Absolutely.
You know, mass
it's
migration.
It's such a rich place in every sense of the
word. If really Africa is almost like the birthplace of the world, according, then that means mass migrations have created much of the rest of the world.
This is true.
And in that
sense,
it has been a powerful part of, you know, of how human beings have lived, have interacted, and have created transnational universes. So that, I think, is the first thing we need to say, that let's first break down that discourse that imagines that there's something strange. It's only because of poverty and struggle that people are leaving. So I really resist that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and the migration hasn't only always been to the West, of course. It's also been, Nigerians, for example, have been involved in, you know, communities in Gambia. Market women have crisscrossed this West African sub-region forever, you know, trading, buying things and so on. These are invisible forms of migration, where you have Hausa communities in parts of West Africa, you have Yoruba communities in other parts. But I know you are talking about these recent migrations.
Yeah.
Is it a brain drain? Is it a brain gain, as some people would say? I think it's both.
Okay. I would say so as well.
I think it's both. And I think it's important for us to look at things beyond remittances. A lot of people have focused on the idea that the new diaspora has really been keeping many economies of African countries afloat by the remittances. The bad side of that is that it has allowed many governments to shirk their responsibilities for social services, so that we are essentially running privatized states in many parts of the continent. It is remittances from people in the diaspora, as well as the wealthy in the country, and just the private citizen that's providing educational support, medical support, you know, building roads, repairing roads, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That's not a healthy place. for us to be, is it? As a,
I don't think any private citizen should be investing in their own roads.
Exactly, but that's what's happening. We're the ones sponsoring scholarships, you know, for people to survive. However, at a personal level, I think it is transforming in many ways, especially for Pan-Africanism. Okay. Without the migrations that has happened, Pan-Africanism had remained some kind of a formal process written in our books.
Mm-hmm.
We've imagined the diaspora as the sixth region of Africa, which is what the African Union has said. But the new migrations, the emergence of a new diaspora, of which you are part of, is creating these new linkages, these new forms of solidarity. And those new forms of solidarity are deepening democracy, deepening our support for Black lives.
It's very refreshing to see.
As well as there. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the things we wrote down could never have imagined that this kind of very vibrant, deepened partnership between diaspora and the continent would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, Africans are coming and realizing that this is really what it means to be Black.
Mm-hmm.
And not just to be South African,
absolutely,
or to be Gambian. And because of that, they are creating new discourses, and it's energizing and transforming how we struggle.
That's been the story of my life. It's the most amazing thing.
It's amazing. It's really incredible. And the young generation is leading a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, through artworks, through collaboration with artists and music. You know, it's transforming a lot of what is happening on the continent. So it's much more than the money that's sent home. It's a lot of exchange of ideas, of expertise. You know, people are traveling. Or it's kind of like a highway.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's been built.
Yeah.
You know, and that highway is crisscrossed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think that it's been lost. But there is a loss.
I guess we'll have to see the short-term and long-term effects. But
that's right.
But that's a perfect analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're losing a lot of medical staff. We're losing a lot of expertise. But to be honest, when you're involved in some of the ways in which people are working and collaborating with individuals back home, it's purely incredible.
Absolutely.
Carnegie has a African Diaspora Fellowship program that actually supports African scholars, you know, going back and working in home countries. So because
really
of that, I was in Nigeria, working with the university there.
That's amazing.
And then I went to Kenya. I would not have gone to Kenya if I had not come here.
Exactly.
And then now I'm in Kenya, and I worked in Kenya for several months at a university there, building new linkages, learning
how
from
exciting.
Them.
How exciting. Absolutely.
So I think it is changing things.
Trying new foods, meeting new people.
Meeting new people.
That's
How we think, how we understand ourselves. I think we have to kind of capitalize on the benefits. It's a reality.
That's amazing.
That could be negative, but we are transforming it to make it a very positive part of our existence.
Great. So I'm very intrigued by your research on democratic development, gendered violence, African cinema, and the politics of memory and trauma in the African post-colony. I'm literally in awe. I guess, what were your main goals when you were conducting it? What drove you to choose this?
That's a fantastic question.
I'm like blushing.
People ask, why are you doing all these different things? And
it's so exciting.
Connection. But there is a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think a central part of what connects it is the power of the African electorate and the people.
Wow.
And tracking how that is being released, and how we often miss that when we use conventional ways of investigating politics or political science. And so when you look at African cinema, popular African cinema.
Like Nollywood?
Like Nollywood. Like Nollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, classical and conventional film studies would tend to dismiss it, which is what they did initially.
Yes.
But I love looking at how things that are typically ignored in academia, it's been challenging structures and institutions that we've not been able to change by policy. This is popular power.
This is
popular power is critical. Scholars are not the ones who are informing politics.
Mm-hmm.
We should be informed by what people are doing and what they're saying. That's where the real politics is. So,
exactly.
You know, for years, when I was growing up, Hollywood was the center of the existence of most African entertainment systems.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we had traditional plays and so on and so forth, traveling theaters, a rich history of storytelling, of artists, of writers, they were marginalized, they were rendered invisible by the same power of misrepresentation that you spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this emergent cinema where that said, listen, we don't have the money, we're not going to pretend we're like Hollywood, but we have this rich creativity.
This is
going to wed the technology, the cheapest form of it, with our own expression,
mm-hmm.
how we see things,
yeah.
how we marry, yeah. how we think about spiritual issues,
mm-hmm.
how we fight.
Absolutely.
And
then
talk about
exactly. You can exaggerate what you feel without saying
how we feel
yeah.
and how we say it.
Absolutely.
And how critical that is. That mm-hmm. is self-representation.
Mm-hmm.
And without self-representation, you cannot have a meaningful democratic system.
Wow.
So this is where, you know, the explosion of Nollywood started from. Ghanaian cinema took over, you know, and also joined that whole very robust, very vibrant thing.
Mm-hmm.
And together, they've done something. They have gone a long way in achieving the forms of Pan-Africanism that we could only dream about.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, a child in Gambia can name Ghanaian stars.
It's crazy. Yeah. And I remember growing up and watching Nollywood movies. And I would see, like, a Ghanaian
yes.
actress and be so excited. Because
that's right.
people think of Africa, they're all black. Like, that's what
they're
like.
Black.
No.
I know. See?
There's such a rich diversity in Nigeria. I mean, I grew up in Lagos, so
see?
It's unimaginable. It's just you're driving to school, you see Okada here, this, that. There's just always something.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And there you are. You're talking about growing up. When I was growing up, that didn't exist. You were
wow.
watching reruns of some of these ancient, you know, old Hollywood TV series and
wow.
so on. And you could name all the Hollywood Western stars.
Mm-hmm.
And you could barely name any African star. Today you can.
Absolutely.
Today you can.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what's powerful. And through that, you know, dealing with issues about gendered voice, you know, women's struggles. It's not just the problem. It's how Africa is combating those
mm-hmm.
issues. That's what I really study.
That's so cool.
You know? So that, I think, is exciting because it gives you the power and
mm-hmm.
the tools, the encouragement
exactly.
to how we fight for change.
Exactly.
And so in all these things, that's the theme. Gendered violence is not
wow.
about being victims. It's about how we are organizing,
mm-hmm.
how we people are exposing the problem.
How are we militarizing against?
How they're fighting that.
Wow.
Exactly. Same thing with democratic development. So that's kind
oh
of, I
gosh.
Think, my theme.
I was really telling them in class again yesterday that you're so refreshing. You live and breathe everything you believe. That's so cool. So cool. So I have two main more questions for you.
Okay.
I guess you can choose which direction you want to go in. I wanted to ask about your roles, like being president of the Women's Initiative. An ambassador to the Stevens Children's Home, or we can talk more about, I guess, your awesome dad.
My
you mentioned
dad.
You mentioned plays. Your dad, Wole Soyinka, was the first African writer to win a Nobel Prize in Literature, which is huge. Not a name you forget. As I told them in class, you're not someone that's easily forgotten. So I guess how did he influence you and your sister?
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, great questions. Cool questions, but
I had to maximize my time with you. You're so cool.
I'm excited spending time with you. You're an amazing, amazing person, and I will join your campaign team when you decide to run for office. Any
we'll
office.
See, but thank you so much.
Tell me which office you're running for. We will organize a campaign trail for you.
Thank you.
Let me start with the, I'm not sure which is easier or much first question, really, mm-hmm. about the work with the African Women's Initiative. Mm-hmm. You know, Ithaca is a little bit isolated. I'm sure you might have noticed.
Oh, yes.
And so we always have to kind of create platforms for our struggles, mm-hmm. you know. And the African Women's Initiative began many years ago. Initially, it was a response by the women, African women, a few of us got together in Ithaca mm-hmm. and decided to kind of support. There was a crisis going on in Somalia. And so the work we do, the work I do, is not just about Nigeria. It's yeah. really is about a struggle wherever.
That's so
and
cool.
So we decided to support that. But we also felt it was critical to be able to have an impact where we are. Mm-hmm. And for so long, you know, the West is used to, when Africans speak here mm-hmm. in the diaspora, we're asking for help elsewhere.
Exactly.
I was like, we're done with that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when I think street children, you know, in the continent, I'm also thinking street children over here.
Absolutely.
And trying to have a conversation that shows the West how to also do a self-examination of their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And how we as Africans can speak into those problems. And as Black people.
Right.
And so that's kind of one of the things we began doing as the African Women's Initiative, was to, on one hand, provide support, advocacy for Black women, you know, here in the association. We have women of African descent,
that's,
you know,
so
old diaspora,
amazing.
New diaspora. We provide support, advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently involved in about advocacy for, I don't know, about what, 6 women, some of who have been victims of abuse, some by police abuse, abuses and violations in the justice system here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a constant battle with
yeah.
power and so on. And it's great because it reminds us that these issues are not just in the African continent, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the stronger we kind of build ourselves up and empower ourselves over here, the better able we are to also provide solidarity with people
Absolutely.
At home.
Absolutely.
That's our we. Our we
yeah.
Works with the, we our raise
we.
Our voices
That's
on
amazing.
Issues on the continent, work with many women's organizations in Africa,
so
working on petitions around police brutality and so on, but also doing the same thing to support people here. So that's
You're
my work.
Literally unreal.
It is. Those women are amazing.
Wow.
Not just our we, but also the women we work with,
mm-hmm.
they are just, they are bold,
yeah.
they are courageous. It is inspiring.
That's so cool. I mean, I did Model UN in high school, and I remember my favorite positions were always the ones when we studied African
mm-hmm.
women. They are amazing.
Like,
we did FGM studies 1 year. I destroyed that
okay.
that argument. I mean, usually, obviously, I'm not going to, like, milk my own cow or anything, but that, it's just, it really gets you going.
That's
African
right.
women have such a fire.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything like it.
I know.
Like, I was telling my friend, my mom, I think she can actually do anything. I'll never tell her that, but I think she's capable of doing anything. African women. Amazing.
I get you. Yes, they are superheroes.
Absolutely. And going off of that, so again, we met at the NSAR's candlelight vigil very briefly,
mm-hmm.
and you and your speech and your presence just echoed the whole pavilion. Like, I guess I just kind of had an epiphany. It's like, we're in Ithaca, New York, but I still feel so connected to Nigeria right now. And it's like what you said about sometimes we just meet to reclaim our space wherever we are, and we don't need to ask for help while we're doing that. We can just exist and have our seat and not be apologetic about it. That's the main thing. Not be apologetic about it.
Don't be apologetic about
yeah.
it. Claim that space.
Absolutely.
Claim that space.
Wow.
We learn a lot from these women.
Wow.
And working with the Steving Children's Home, I think,
mm-hmm.
was an extension of that. Began many years ago, as the Boko Haram crisis just kind of escalated. One day I was sitting there
yeah.
and reading about a bombing, and I just asked myself, what has happened to all the victims
yeah.
and the survivors? And so I was online and searching, and I saw the home. I got in touch with them,
mm-hmm.
and it's been many years now of collaboration.
That's
they have
amazing.
Gone through a lot. They have, we had over 400 plus young people who had lost their parents, one parent or both parents, as a result of the crisis, and were being housed in the Stevens home. The home has faced a lot of attacks, and last year, the ferocity of the attacks led to the death, really. I would say almost of a broken heart of the founder, Dr. Isaac Wusu. His wife has taken over the struggle. It's very difficult. So
that's,
we provide guidance, support, children's welfare, investigation where there are allegations of abuse. You know, I've had to set up a panel here to investigate and, you know, seeing the involvement of Western, you know, individuals in destroying and seeking to destroy this has just been one of the greatest grievances of my heart. It's awful. And, you know, trying to build support in the country for, you know, for these kids. And sometimes the government itself has been a problem. You know, I recall an episode where a governor's wife sent some materials to support the children. The people she sent got to the home. They took a photo, did a photo op.
Oh my gosh.
And then loaded all the materials back in the van and took it away. Impact of corruption.
Wow.
The governor's wife was not aware that they stole the materials that she sent them to deliver. So kind of just being
That's
able to amplify that voice, constantly fighting against injustice and, you know, being there to support them. That's been one of the things. So with that, what has my father's work?
Real quick, I just wanted to say, I think it's amazing that when you deal with these issues, you don't, I think when some people are faced with really deep things, it's easy to cower away due to our sense of privilege. I mean, if I don't want to read Donald Trump in the news, I can simply turn off Twitter. But you face it head on. You go through the deep, like, painful experiences and fix them. I think that's amazing.
You're right. I learned that I cannot look away. But I also learned, you know, I think the power of solidarity is important. You have to find people who you can work with, and it can be very difficult. And then you have to learn how to debrief, how to self-care, which we don't always do very well.
Not as Africans.
We run ourselves into the ground. You're like, I can't.
Like, why are you crying?
Like, I gotta do this. And then you keep going because it just, it's worthwhile.
Absolutely.
And so fighting at those multiple levels, you know, the national, the international, you fight through your work as a scholar. You fight on the streets, you know. You fight when you turn up at somebody's court case as they fight for custody, you know. And then at the end of the day, you sit down and try and rest a little bit and then get ready for the next day.
That's amazing.
I think actually it's the only thing that helps you not to be in despair. My students often ask me why I teach so many sad things. And sometimes I still have a smile on my face. I said, you know, when you are actually in the trenches, you don't have time to be as depressed as you could.
This is true. There are bigger issues.
But when you, when you, when I sit down and just read the news, it weighs on me. But when I sit down and think, okay, how do we begin to tackle this? And how do I work with others? Then
it's very positive thinking.
On top of it, you feel more proactive.
Absolutely.
I guess I think in some ways I owe my parents a debt of gratitude.
Absolutely.
We don't always like to admit it. kids, you're not always conscious of how you gain so much, but it's a lot of it is unconscious. I think my biggest gratitude to my parents, you know, my mother and my father, is that they normalized a struggle for social justice. I can't easily point to one thing, but just to say that growing up in an atmosphere where you're, you know, this was the conversation, it made it seem like such a normal part of life. And I remember my daughter saying something like, somebody came to their class in high school here and asked them if they could point out films, Disney films that had racist components. She said, She said, people were looking confused in the class, but mm-hmm. her hand shut up. She was like, well, finally, all the years of being traumatized.
That's so funny. It's paying off.
Have some benefit. And I said, what do you mean? She was like, every time we watched a film, you kept commenting.
That's so funny. And analyzing their race issues.
Which they did not like at all. And they were like, could you just be quiet? But I think what happens is that, you know, subconsciously you just find that there is your parents, both my parents, actually. My mother is a warrior queen. And although my parents were divorced when I was in college, but they're very similar. My mother never saw a situation of injustice that she would not get up and fight about.
Wow.
Even now when I call her on the phone, 1 hour of the phone conversation is me saying, yes. Terrible, terrible that they
That's
did that.
That's so funny.
Like, they didn't read the news. I'm like, oh yeah, I did. I didn't.
Wait, that's so amazing.
She's like lecturing me on the U.S. and so principled, both of them, that
so
she refused
amazing.
To come
so
to the
informed.
U.S. She refused to come back to visit us in the U.S. until George Bush left office.
Wow.
She's like, she would call and say, that your useless president. And I was like, he's not my president. So George Bush was out. Okay. When Obama came in, she was like, okay, now I'll come back.
Yeah, you'll come back every day for 4 years.
Very principled. They would say, you know, until That's South really Africa amazing. Is free, you know. My mm-hmm. mother would be like, I wouldn't die until South Africa is free. Mm-hmm. My father, the same thing.
Very
and
principled.
When I got married on, had my traditional wedding in Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
then got married in England, for my wedding, my church wedding, my brother had to give me away because my father was celebrating with Mandela.
Wow.
And we just saw it as normal. You know what I mean?
Wow. It didn't That's seem unreal. Like,
it didn't seem like anything, but like, yay! You know? and so I think
unreal.
That is something that I really admire from both of them.
Yeah.
My mother would, you know, talk about the Palestinians and South Africa and so
wow.
on.
Wow. It's very
so
principled just and disciplined.
Till today, they, you know, just celebrate the struggles for justice and they get worked up around injustices. And so, yeah, I think I'm proud of them.
So cool.
Glad for how they fought, you know, mm-hmm. and that we're different. We are different in many ways, but also
so you've passed that on to your children.
Very unconsciously, it's just
wow.
passed on to our normality and being normal. Mm-hmm. And I think all of my siblings are the same. All of them, my late sister, my sister now, who worked on displaced persons in Nigeria, my brother, you know, it's really been
it's unbelievable.
The normal part of a family.
Well, those are all the questions I have for you. And
thank you.
Again,
and you, where
I'm
does your struggle, where does
so
your
in awe.
Come from?
I just like seeing people happy, and it just makes me angry when certain things that are in place are ignored and reinforced. And sometimes, because I use the word ignored, because yes, there's ignorance, but people choose to be ignorant. I'm so sorry, but in this day and age, you have
That's
no
right.
excuse. No excuse.
Preach
so,
it.
So I think a big thing for me is mobilization.
That's right.
Just in a general sense, and I'm still figuring out what really drives me. But there's just so many things. I think this year we just might have seen it all. So
yeah, what a year.
But it's just equipping us for anything. I mean, anytime my friends are down, I say, well, you know what, you've been through 10 times worse. So that's each day. I just try to be a positive being in everyone's life, because I know what it's like to not be happy, not be positive. So there's nothing like waking up each day and being mindful. So that's where I'm starting, and I'll let you know where it goes.
Like I said,
yeah.
we are, you know, excited about, you know, what you're doing, your
Thank
interests,
you so
your
much.
Questions, and how you've, you know, explained who you, defined who you are.
Thank you.
And I think that's powerful, you know, and like you said, this year was a year of, I think, if anyone had any illusions left, this was a year of disillusionment.
Absolutely.
A very powerful and positive one.
So humbling.
There is no looking to the U.S. as the answer for democracy and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. We have heard threats about kidnapping governors. We've seen a president mobilizing troops against...
Everything we thought we knew has been shattered.
Exactly. And I am so glad and sad that it's happened here, because this is the time for people to really stand up and Absolutely. Continue to fight and know that the struggle for change is a struggle for all of us. We have Absolutely. To be out there. We have to be doing everything we can.
Wow. I think at my age, it's really easy to get sucked into your issues. Like right now, I have finals for the past 4 days. All I've done is work. I think I've slept. I laid down and I wasn't laying down. But to find and have this greater, I guess, reason for being, that's what I'm working towards. And I'm so excited to wake up each day and live and breathe what I believe, like you.
Wonderful.
Wow.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations again.
Yay, thank you so much.
A great almost end to your semester.
Mm-hmm.
And when do you graduate? When are you
graduate
done?
Graduate next May.
Yay!
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you'll come join us in the field someday.
I would love to, and I'll be sure to keep in touch.
Okay, that's great.
So I hope you get a lot of sleep and rest, and thank you so much again.
Thank you very much, Nabila. All the best.
Bye, Dr. P.